97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, happy Tuesday to you. Welcome in. You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show. That would be me. Glad you're with us this morning. A great start to the day out there, and at least we are not in South Florida where they could have a hurricane very soon. So we're doing okay up here. Kim St. Onjen here with me this morning. Ethan Bright continues his vacation. He's back tomorrow. Drew is filling in for him this morning, and we appreciate that. Sue Thomas is going to have all of your traffic coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Great conversation last hour with former Senator John Lamping. If you missed it, I'd highly recommend you go back and pick up the podcast. You can go to the Odyssey app if you have that. That's one easy way to do it. 971talk.com is another way. We podcast every segment on the show. So if you can't listen to the entire four-hour broadcast, you can go back and listen to key interviews. And John Lamping was talking to us about redistricting and the fact that they tried this in Missouri a while back. He's not sure the governor's on board with it. So that was an interesting conversation. If you're hopeful like I am that we go to a 7-1 map, you have to understand some of the challenges to getting there. And I think that's what John explained very well for us. That was at about 6:35 this morning. So you can go back and find that for us. Coming up, we've still got Wiggins in the studio in the 8 o'clock hour. We will get to Mark Walters for 2A Tuesday. And always look forward to that and find out what's going on around the country on Second Amendment issues. Speaking of crime, coming up, we're going to talk to Kurt Friz in a few minutes. He's the St. Charles County chief because of this juvenile problem that's been going on. Now, this is not new. It's been going on for years. Remember, Kim, when they tried to solve the juvenile crime problem downtown by banning the Lime scooters?
I forgot about that.
It's like that out of the scene in The Jerk where the guy's shooting the oil cans and he's like, it's the oil cans. He hates the oil cans. Guess what, you idiot? Duck. He's shooting at you. They completely missed the point on that.
They missed the point a lot. What was the whole debacle with the, wasn't it they were trying to build like a basketball court and they felt like as long as they had that, that would keep them from shooting each other and carjacking people. Wasn't that something too?
You were probably still in high school when they tried the whole midnight basketball debacle and that was a failure. It was a flop and people were stealing money. I mean, it was a disaster from day one. It never worked like they thought it would.
No, that's shocking.
It's always some alternative way to handle the juveniles instead of locking their criminal butts up. Mm-hmm. And they're afraid to do it because they don't want it to follow them into adulthood. I'm sorry. Some of these kids are already gone. They're used by older gang members who know they won't have any fallout if they're the one that steals the car and they get slapped on the wrist and they go back out the next night and they steal another car and they get slapped on the wrist and the next night until there's some fallout, some consequence for doing that, nothing ever changes. Now, whether that's locking up the parents who refuse to parent and discipline their child, maybe that's an option. I don't know. The police chiefs have gotten together and their law enforcement legislative committee is trying to get some changes in Jeff City. And that's what we're going to talk to Chief Friz about coming up here shortly, because something has got to be done. Something is going to have to happen out of this whole thing. There's no doubt about that. So we'll get to that for you coming up in just a couple of minutes. Right now, Drew, let's get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
I understand a lot of you tend to be on the liberal side, but you don't want to get mugged and raped and shot and killed. And so you can be anything you want, but you want to have safety in the streets. You want to be able to leave your apartment.
Yeah, you know, I'm wondering how many of those journalists sitting in that room yesterday were thinking to themselves, God, I hate it when he's right. Because you know their network may not let them take that angle, but they all have the same thought when they walk out their door in the morning in Washington to get in their car, is today the day I get carjacked? So he made a great point there, and I hope it drove it home for a few of them.
Four of the five seats we are adding are Hispanic majority seats that happen to vote Republican. Democrats are really upset about the fact is that their base voters, Hispanics and Democrats, are fleeing Democrats.
Yeah. The base that they've always depended on, the fact that they were trying to load the United States up with future new voters by opening up the borders isn't working out exactly the way they would have hoped for those who are already legal and can vote.
Just as we go to break, I should note that the most violent moment in recent history in D.C. was January 6th. And it was an attack on the United States Capitol by a lot of people who were doing it in the name of Donald Trump. And it included the people who were hurt, included members of law enforcement.
Really, really, Dana, I think only one person got killed that day. Her name was Ashley Babbitt. Say the word. I also wonder if Dana Bash there with her bias on CNN is willing to point out that they tried to call the National Guard in and Nancy Pelosi said no.
Police say around 2 a.m. Tuesday, a 36-year-old Lyft driver drove to the area of Carter and North Newstead Avenues in North St. Louis to pick up passengers. Moments later, he got the scare of his life.
Yeah. A couple questions come to mind here. This is our friend Robert Townsend, who I used to work with Robert over at Channel 4 years ago. He works at Channel 5 now. He's been featured 2 days in a row here on the program. Do you realize that?
I didn't.
Yesterday, I played the bite where he was talking about how the Mike Brown case highlighted police violence. Mm-hmm. And I ripped Robert a new one for that one because that is the opposite of what happened in Ferguson. Mike Brown wouldn't have been dead if he hadn't attacked a police officer and robbed a convenience store. So Channel 5 got it wrong. Now, in this case, he's just reporting on the fact that some Lyft driver was stupid enough to respond to a call on Newstead in North St. Louis in the middle of the night. First of all, what the hell were you thinking, right? Second of all, you paid for that. Consequence of that was getting carjacked. Now, that's just the beginning of the story because the people that carjacked him were 14 and 15 years old. And they took his car and there was a chase and the police caught him. And then the police, because the juvenile laws are not very strong, they get a slap on the wrist and they get released back to their parents because that's how our juvenile system works. The next night, the little schmuck got arrested again for doing the same thing. What's the definition of stupidity? How long are we going to put up with this?
What kind of conversation did the kid's mom have with him? Surely she knew what had happened. Don't do that again. You shouldn't have carjacked that person. Okay. And then you go out and do it again. It's probably, you know who
gentle
it is.
Gentle parenting.
Gentle parenting.
That's it.
Right. How are you feeling right now? Are your feelings hurt? Because I don't want to say anything that will upset you. It's the same mom, type of mom, I should say, who her son was arrested on the 4th of July for setting off fireworks like an idiot, quite literally shooting them at people in cars. Here in downtown St. Louis, she has to go pick up her son at the police department, and I think she was even fined, and then dropped him right back off here in downtown St. Louis to continue shooting off fireworks.
People have just given up. They've given up parenting and responsibility, and I don't know what all the answers are to it, but some police chiefs have gotten together and kind of formed an outline of what they'd like to see the legislature do. Because you got to change the penalties for this if there's going to be any change in what we're seeing at the street level. What's very clear is that the city of St. Louis is not going to independently handle it. They're just not. They have a wrong approach to law enforcement, unfortunately, when it comes to juveniles. And they'll argue, well, it's the laws that are on the books. So maybe there's a solution to that. We're going to get to St. Charles County Police Chief Kurt Frizz coming up right after the break here, and we'll tell you what they're hoping to get accomplished. Bottom of the hour, it is Tuesday. That means 2A Tuesday. We'll get to our friend Mark Walters about 7:35. Stay tuned.
Police say the suspect sped away in the stolen car and led officers on a pursuit that ended on Penrose. Several boys got away, but police took the driver, just 16 years old, into custody. They say they arrested the same boy Tuesday night after he allegedly carjacked an Uber driver a mile away on Kennerly.
These back-to-back violent crimes highlight the continued challenges that our community faces, though, especially when it comes to violent crimes involving juveniles.
You know, I know a number of people who are police officers in the city, and the county, and a lot of other counties around the area for that matter. But they're all frustrated by this. They all share that frustration of the St. Louis Police Department that they catch juveniles and then they catch them again the next night because there's no teeth involved in the law here. We're fortunate enough to have Chief Kurt Friz with us from St. Charles County right now. And Chief, how you been?
Doing well, Mark. Thanks. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, I appreciate you giving me a few minutes this morning. You know, I looked at your release that you put out here from the Law Enforcement Legislative Coalition, which I think you head up right now. And this is something that's, I'm sure, been on your radar for a while.
It has been. We meet, made up of chiefs all across the state of Missouri and some private sector folks and lobbyists, and we come up with our legislative priorities. We're well ahead of the 2026 legislative session, so this is our top priority for the 2026 legislative session. We're already talking to Attorney General Bailey and starting to network with some of the legislators to let them know that we need to see a change in our juvenile justice system.
I know you talked about the point system being very broken because these teens are like Mark was just saying, they're getting let out way too early. What changes would you like to see? What do you think would help with this issue that we're seeing across the St. Louis region?
Well, you know, the problem we have is if you commit a serious crimes against a person, an assault, you need to be detained. Right now, if you're not in the system, I mean, you haven't been caught doing anything yet, you don't have any points, and you go out and shoot somebody, and there's an incident where a year and a half ago, a St. Louis City police officer shot up by a juvenile. They apprehended him, and they were told to take him home because he didn't have any points. And because that only qualifies you for 12 points, shooting at a police officer or shooting at anybody. Only gets you 12 points, so it doesn't qualify them for detention under this current point system. So it's a catch-and-release system that it just doesn't work.
How do you make that 100 points? I mean, I don't know what you're asking for here, but I mean, how much worse could it be if they'd actually killed the officer? Would they have been detained?
Yeah, in that case, they would have
been.
Yeah,
well.
Unfortunately, is that what it takes? I mean, I think, you know, we're looking for more common-sense legislation that any serious crimes against persons or stealing of an automobile, any serious felony, they need to be detained until they have a hearing and determine a course of action moving forward.
Chief, is there any common sense conversation here about maybe reducing the age of what we consider to be a juvenile? I mean, is it now 18? I mean, should it be 16? Should it be 15? Because To your point and to the story Channel 5 did, this kid, it was, I think, 14 or 15, and they know they can get away with it.
Well, and to be honest, a few years ago, Missouri had to raise the age because it was 17, and they raised the age to 18, and frankly, it worked pretty well at 17. So I personally would like to see it back at 17. I don't know that we'll be able to get that accomplished. But what we're also not seeing is certifying juveniles as adults that are committing these serious assaults and crimes against persons. We need to see more certification as adults, especially when they're 17 years old.
Chief, did I see, too, that the different jurisdictions don't have access to a teen's criminal record? So if you arrest someone in St. Charles County, if they committed a crime, even a felony, you know, say within the last year in a different jurisdiction, you wouldn't have access to all that information?
Yeah, that's correct. Unlike an adult, which we have access to that information, the juvenile system, we don't have that, so we don't know. We're kind of flying blind.
I understand. We're talking to Chief Kurt Friz, St. Charles County. I understand the long-standing argument that you need to protect these kids who make minor mistakes so it doesn't follow them their entire life, but we're at a different time in a different place these days. I think there has to be some acknowledgement of that. Who's pushing back against this, Chief? Do you know? Is it child advocates? I mean, who's fighting you on this?
Yeah, I think that's what we'll find. You know, we're very early into this. We're trying to get in front of the as we get into the legislative session. So we're well in front of this. So we don't know what kind of pushback. I do imagine exactly what you just said. There's going to be some child advocacy groups. Push back on this, the same people that push for a raise the age and this point system that doesn't work. I think we're going to find some resistance, and that's when we get deep into the legislative session, we'll find out who that's going to be.
How do you see this whole thing playing out? I mean, legislatively, you're talking about some changes that need to be made, but what's the likelihood that this can actually happen in, you know, in a timely fashion?
I think we're going to get something. We'll get something out of this. We're organized between the Missouri Police Chiefs Association, the LELC, the Sheriff's Association. You know, we're we're doing a collective effort on this to have an all hands on deck approach. And so we're going to have a unified voice across the state of Missouri to accomplish this. So we're going to have a lot of state legislators, state senators that are going to support us.
Chief, I know you've got experience in St. Louis County, and now you've been in St. Charles County. I mean, this crosses city lines, right? I mean, this problem is everywhere.
Yeah, it does. In fact, what's interesting is when we see juveniles come out here to St. Charles County, the 15-point rule can be left to interpretation. So our juvenile justice administrator out here, she feels like there's enough latitude in the law to, if it's a weapon involved or an automobile, stealing an auto, they can detain them. And what we're finding, these kids from St. Louis City or St. Louis County that come out here to St. Charles County, they're detaining them. And so we're keeping them. And these kids are having a fit when they find out it's not a catch and release program in St. Charles County.
Don't mess around.
Which I think is great.
Yeah.
And then until they get their hearing, so if they do it on a Friday, they're not going to get a hearing until Monday or Tuesday. And so they're going to stay the weekend with us. And they don't come back and commit a crime out in St. Charles County. So that shows it's effective.
Is the 15 points, is that the most? Is that like a murder? Or what do you have to do to get the most points, the highest number?
Well, as it breaks down, points 1 through 9 or the child should be released, 10 through 14. Alternative other than detention should be taken. That means pretty much send them home, maybe an ankle monitor at best, and a score of 15 or above. So there is I don't know where the point system goes north of that. But, the problem is, like I said, a serious assault on a person. You stab someone, you shoot somebody. That's only 12 points. So if you're not in the system, I mean, you haven't been caught yet doing anything. Technically, they don't have to detain you.
Chief Kirchfer
that's ridiculous.
Is with us this morning. I got about a minute left here. Are you calling for any increase in penalty against the parents? Because that's a big problem. If they were held accountable for this, maybe that would fix part of the issue.
Well, yeah, and I think that needs to be part of the conversation, because a lot of times that's where the problem starts, is at home. And that's unfortunate. But there needs to be some accountability. Just sending these kids home doesn't always resolve the issue, because what a lot of us know as responsible parenting is not always the case. So that definitely needs to be part of the conversation.
Yeah, very true. Chief, we appreciate your time this morning, and good luck with this. We'll follow it as we get closer to December and January and the session gets started again.
Okay, Mark, thank you very much.
You bet. Great talking to you. Chief Kurt Frizz there from St. Charles County. It kind of makes me glad I just moved to St. Charles County, because these kids are not getting away with that crap out there like they are in St. Louis County and maybe City.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Wow. All right, coming up, we're going to talk to my friend Mark Walters with Armed American Radio. A gun dealer is asking the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn another state gun law. We'll get to that for you when we come back.
If you ban them in the future, the bullets will have been shot and there won't be any more available.
So you don't shoot deer with a bullet that size? If you do, you could cook it at the same time.
Put that double barrel shotgun and fire 2 blasts outside the house.
That is without a doubt the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
This is 2A Tuesday, brought to you by the Range St. Louis West.
Foreseeable future, the state Supreme Court ruled it is legal for Minnesotans to carry weapons that do not have a serial number. A 1994 state statute criminalized them, but the justices said the rule was too vague. While they agree ghost guns are dangerous, they decided Minnesota state lawmakers should regulate them through legislation.
Wow, how about that? Let's invite Mark Walters in here from Armed American Radio. Welcome back, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Kim. Good morning, St. Louis. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet, man. Always great having you on. I saw this story. It caught my eye because, of course, the whole word ghost gun is designed to scare the hell out of people. But in Minnesota, of all places, they've decided it's legal for people to carry a ghost gun that they've assembled at their house.
Why shouldn't it be? When I was listening to that news report, they all agreed ghost guns are dangerous.
Yeah, I heard that.
What makes, let's explore that briefly for a second. What makes a ghost gun dangerous? Well, that it doesn't have a serial number. A serial number isn't a trigger. A serial number isn't a mind. A serial number isn't a criminal. What makes the ghost gun dangerous? It's just a physical tool. That's all it is. And, you know, we could take this back. I was talking, it's kind of interesting when I heard that clip. I was thinking about the conversation I had on my show yesterday about what was happening in Michigan and an article that I had read by a woman named Marcy from Women for Gun Rights in Michigan, who wrote about Traverse City and how the left always jumps to gun control. Michigan attack was a knife attack. Yet the media doesn't knee-jerk react like they do to this, to a knife attack, only when it's a gun. And if it's a ghost gun, somehow it's worse. When, as if that person couldn't have stolen a gun or maybe bought a gun, whatever it was. So I don't understand, though. You know, this is a thing that you have to try to get in your mind, right? Is to try to get in their minds. It's really hard to do.
Well, these are people in Europe. What was that? What European country was it where they were trying to dull the knives? Because there were so many knife attacks.
Yeah.
They think that that's the solution, is to dull the knives.
Yeah, you can't slit somebody's throat with a dull, pointy, I don't know.
Kitchen knives.
It's crazy. But yeah, that's what they do.
How are you going to cut your steak if you don't have a sharp kitchen knife? I mean, come on. All they eat is meat and potatoes in Great Britain. Come on.
You get your samurai sword off the wall and you just cut your steak that way.
Yeah, maybe they should dull the front of the blade. You're not supposed to poke holes in it and let the juice out of it anyway. If you're doing that, you're the guy that smashes the hamburgers on the grill and gets rid of all the fat.
Man,
you don't want to do that.
I know. I wondered that article you're referring to out of Michigan. I mean, was the lady pointing out the fact that it was probably 2 or 3 days later before the mainstream media would admit that whole situation was ended by a good guy with a gun?
Yeah, and of course, I had to exacerbate that situation because that was a huge topic of conversation on the show for a long time.
Yeah.
Sadly, including Fox News, who didn't report it until after CNN reported it, either on live television or on their digital platforms, on their website. It was fascinating to me.
Yeah, I read it on the Daily Mail first. Daily Mail had a picture from the scene of the guy being cornered by the guy with the gun. And I'm like, well, how come I haven't heard any other mainstream media outlet report this yet? That's a key.
And it was interesting to me that it was CNN that did it before anybody else.
Yeah.
Maybe CNN thought, hey, let's try to get the jump on this. What I don't understand, and I want listeners to think about, is it's just part of a news story. The news story is guy stabs a bunch of people, gets cornered by people who try to help that are unarmed. They themselves get cut up until a guy with a gun steps up. Why leave that out? That's just part of the story. Which proved, and a huge part of the story, by the way, that's what makes it such a huge human interest story. And these stories should be top leading stories across major news networks as they unfold. And they, as we know, many of them have never been reported, and they should have been. But why do they feel that they shouldn't report that part? That's just proof that there's an agenda behind what it is they're reporting. And that should concern everybody, because where else are there agendas that are being hidden that we're unaware of?
Yeah, there's a filter there. We're talking to Mark Walters, right, host of Armed American Radio's Daily Defense. There is a filter there. We've seen it. Remember when Barack Obama lamented the days? He lamented the current media days. He wanted to go back to the days of Peter Jennings and Tom Brokaw, where you had to get all of your news filtered through three outlets. And then it was okay, right? They didn't want you to have an alternative point of view. They all reported the exact same thing.
Well, that's why they're all upset about getting rid of, you know, NPR and all of this. You know, it's been so one-sided. The media coverage has been so one-sided for so many years, and they've controlled it and controlled the narrative. And you can go back and look at the montage clips, right, of every single anchor on any outlet all repeating the same word over and over and over again. They're literally being handed talking points, and that's how we get our news. And that begs the biggest question of all. Why would anybody believe anything they tell you? When you know they lie about certain things, you think that's it? They only lie about guns? No, they tell you what they want you to hear, and they leave out what they don't want you to hear, which is, in many cases, that lie of omission, far worse and more dangerous than the BS in misinformation that they're giving us. Here's an example. Chris Murphy. We all love and hate, you know, Chris Murphy, the anti-gun zealot who, for whatever reason, wants to put his face on Twitter every single day now. And that's fine because he's great for content. But he put a tweet out yesterday. Let's be totally clear. Trump's decision to take over the D.C. police isn't about public safety. The most violent cities are in Republican states. and there's no takeover happening there. What Chris Murphy apparently is too stupid to understand is all of those cities are Democrat-run in the red states. We'd love to get rid of the blue cities in the red states. Guess what would happen? There would be no more violent crime. It's all coming from Democrat-controlled areas. And he got eaten alive.
Oh, I'm sure. And I'm
so stupid, it's embarrassing.
I'm so glad to hear that. I'd miss that. But that's a perfect response. You and I have both complained about the fact that the Supreme Court has not been quick enough to take up some of these challenges to gun bans. In Washington State, they have a high-capacity magazine ban that their own Supreme Court upheld earlier this year. And now there's been an appeal to the Supreme Court. You think this is something they look at?
You know, I'm going to have to drive listeners to go and listen to the podcast version of my show when I was at the Gun Owners of America this past weekend. On Saturday, I interviewed constitutional attorney Mark Smith, who laid bare what he believes the Supreme Court is going to do going forward relative to gun rights. And he does not believe the Supreme Court is going to take any magazine ban case whatsoever until they address the quote-unquote assault weapons ban first. And you dive back into what Kavanaugh wrote that you and I talked about a couple months back in his, I guess it was, you would call it a dissent, or he wrote a statement about how the court is going to revisit one of these cases in the very near term, which, according to attorney Mark Smith, is likely going to be the next term coming up.
Yeah.
Because they can't address that ban until they address the gun itself, which we know will win that case. And when we win that case, that's when the court will likely look at one of the magazine ban cases, but we're kind of looking at it backwards. It was an interesting take, but it's on my podcast if you want to go to armedamericanradio.com and listen to that fascinating conversation with Mark Smith. It's very complicated, but he lays very bare what he believes is going to happen there. So that's a great question, but what Mark said would seem to make perfect sense.
Remember when they banned the arm braces and we argued that it was only an accessory, right?
Yeah.
The Supreme Court in Washington, in a 7-2 decision, ruled that high-capacity magazines aren't guns. They're just a component or an accessory, and therefore it's okay for the state law to regulate them.
Yeah, but they're accessories that are inherent to the functioning of a firearm.
Correct.
Which, of course, falls under the purview of the Second Amendment and therefore cannot be banned. And that's where you have split decisions. This, all of this that we're talking about will get hashed out by the Supreme Court. And I think what was even more fascinating with Mark's take, my response was that Thomas is dying. He's itching to write one of these opinions.
Yeah.
And he agreed with me, but he believes Kavanaugh might get the opinion on an assault weapons ban case based on past references to what he has said before, the way this has played out. So this is going to be really fun to watch. But I want people to understand, we're going to win these cases. And we know we're going to win these cases. So yeah. Feel good about that. It just takes time, unfortunately, but we will get there.
Too much time for particularly my brethren here in Southern Illinois, who are having their Second Amendment rights stomped on every single day by J.B. Pritzker. So the Supreme Court action has been too long delayed, in our opinion, for sure. Mark, thank you, my friend.
Well, it looks like he's on Ozempic, so he's running for president.
That's a good point. Oh, man. Remind people where they can listen to Armed American Radio's Daily Defense.
Armed American Radio's Daily, armedamericanradio.com. Just click listen live at 3 o'clock Central Time, and at 7 o'clock Sundays, you'll get me 6 days a week talking about these issues. Thank you, guys.
You bet, Mark. We'll talk to you soon.
You bet.
All right. See ya. Thank you for that. Good insight there on when and where we might get some of these challenges. They've got to overturn this thing in Illinois. It is a blatant, in-the-face violation of the Second Amendment to the Constitution. There's no doubt about it. Kim, what are we talking about in Kim on a Whim?
I'm always so encouraged by everything that RFK Jr. is doing as it relates to the MAHA movement. And just when they take like 5 steps forward, some stupid company takes 10 steps backward. Wait until you hear what one company is doing in the name of climate change.
Kim on a Whim.
There's just always stupid stuff they're coming up with in the name of, well, they would call it health. I would call it the opposite of that. But they're trying to protect the environment. Listen to what they've come up with now. Some business that's out of Illinois, just west of Chicago.
It looks, smells, and tastes like the butter we're all familiar with, but without the farmland, fertilizers, or emissions tied to that typical process. And this butter breakthrough, it's happening right here in Batavia.
In the middle of an industrial park in a suburb west of Chicago, something unprecedented is happening.
So you're using this gas right now to like cook your food. And we're proposing that we would like to first make your food with that gas.
The company is called Savor. And you better believe it. Their pioneering tech uses carbon and hydrogen to make the stick of butter you see on this plate.
Doesn't that sound good? Butter made from gas? Who wants to eat that?
From carbon?
Yes, carbon and hydrogen, and they're making sticks of butter that look like what you probably have in your refrigerator right now. But of course, you go to their reasoning, and it talks about how it will significantly reduce our carbon footprint, and it's all about emissions, and this is better, and it's not hurting the farmland, and all this stupid stuff. Why are they doing this? And Bill Gates, this should not surprise anybody, Bill Gates is backing this company and says, this is a fantastic idea. Yeah, let's all make food out of gas and eat it. Why? We have RFK Jr. leading up HHS. Thank goodness. Okay. The MAHA movement has made incredible strides. And then again, it's like you have them saying, hey, we're taking out the dyes. Hey, we're doing this. Hey, we're doing that. We're taking out the mercury from vaccines and all these different things. And then you have stupid companies that think that this is a good idea to make butter out of gas.
Yep. You know, like the hydrogenated oils and all that stuff. I mean, I'm sure I ate margarine for years, but we've gone back to real salted butter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why there's a sudden need to do this unless it's to what? Cut down on the need for dairy cows? Are you trying to hurt the dairy industry? Is that it?
I guess. It says, of the 51 billion tons of greenhouse gases emitted every year, 7% of it is from production
cows.
Of fats and oils from animals and plants, which Savor, the company making this butter, says makes their process the most climate-friendly option.
Give me some cow flatulence, please. Honestly.
No, seriously.
The smell of the great outdoors, to walk out your door and you know the guy next door just got some manure spread on his corn crop, and it smells disgusting, but it's only temporary.
It's funny how they're all saying, well, this is going to help the climate because it has a small carbon footprint. What do the farmers think about this when their cows are no longer needed to produce the butter, to the milk, to the butter, because they're just going to make it out of some lab
and
say it's healthy?
Bill Gates behind some crap like this because
right.
He's on this whole climate change where he jets around in his big carbon footprint private jet, telling you to eat not butter. I can't believe it's not butter. I can't believe it tastes like carbon.
Can't believe it's gas. Savor, the company, says they take carbon dioxide from the air and hydrogen from water, heat them up, oxidize them, and they get a final result that looks like candle wax, but it's in fact fat molecules like those in beef, cheese, or vegetable oil. So if this sounds yummy to you, then by all means, you please indulge in your carbon butter.
It makes me about as anxious to eat that as I would be for an Impossible burger. No, thank you. No. Just say no to all this nonsense. All right. Coming up, we're going to talk more about what's going on in the Francis Howell School District with the superintendent who never was the superintendent but got $200,000. We'll be back.
Get more at 971talk.com.